Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Zach? Zach, yes. Where are you?
I'm over here.
Over where?
Over here, in the middle of the arena.
Oh, hello, Zach.
And I'm doing this because on today's episode of Who Is My Doctor, we're watching The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
So Hugh Jackman's going to be in this?
No, that's The Greatest Showman. Although I wouldn't mind a few song and dance numbers in Doctor Who, a full musical episode.
We haven't had an Australian Doctor. That could be interesting.
No, this is we're going to watch the seventh Doctor story, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, I guess I should have been a little more leading with that. What does that sort of inspire any thoughts for you, Cassie, when I say The Greatest Show in the Galaxy?
No.
So we're going to go back to the 25th season of the show. This is the second to last season of the classic series, as they had it. And we're going to look at the seventh Doctor, who has he's the one with the question mark umbrella and the question mark sweater vest.
Oh, was this the one that was dressed up a little bit like a dweeb?
You're gonna have to narrow that down, Cassie. They're all dressed like dweebs.
even
and especially David Tennant.
A very yacht centric.
Yeah,
the sweater vest.
Yeah, it's a sweater vest. He's got his little hat. He's got the question mark umbrella. You were not a big fan of his outfit, but I am curious. Did he give you any kind of vibes when you were looking at him that you might be expecting in today's episode?
No.
All right, then. Well, we will find out a little bit about him together then. This episode does feature the fourth iconic classic companion. You've seen the other three already. The four big companions of the classic show were Jamie McCrimmon.
Mm-hmm. We love him.
Joe Grant, who is the third Doctor's blonde companion, if you remember her.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Jane Smith, who I think mm-hmm. who obviously you met first. And now this companion is named Ace. Ace is in her mid-20s, and her main thing, as far as I can... If you were to ask me what her main thing is...
Is that she's in her mid-20s. That's it.
It's that she is violent.
Okay.
She carries around an aluminum baseball bat and has a backpack full of explosives.
Oh my God. So are you telling me that this companion may or may not be one of our very good and dear close friends?
She certainly has the vibe of some of our very good and dear close friends.
If given the opportunity to carry around a backpack full of explosives, you know this person absolutely would.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know that the name would mean anything to people anyway, so no point in putting it in. But this episode we'll be watching is called The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. It was the last story of the 25th season. It was originally meant to be the second story, but some shuffling issues ended up making it the last one. I had a very strong feeling you would like it because just I don't want to give too much away, but I think you're going to dig its vibe.
I saw this episode from across the bar and I really dug its vibe.
Just talking about Ace, we're going to get into the Cassie Professy a little bit for this for this serial. So while Ace is quite violent, as I said, she does like to hit things, and so she's got a lot of aggressive energy, I guess you could call it. She does have what I think is a pretty common fear for people.
Mm-hmm.
One of those like iconic fears people have.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Ace might be afraid of?
Clowns, spiders, or both at the same time.
Clown spiders.
Yeah.
She's afraid of the face spiders that the 11th Doctor mentions.
Ugh, yeah. Since the name of this episode is The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Yes, The Greatest
universe.
Show in the Galaxy.
The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Thank you. Big voice. My immediate thought would be, and you said very common fear.
Mm-hmm.
Clowns is a very common fear.
Clowns is a very common fear.
You don't allow me to have any clown art hanging in the house. So.
Because I disagree with the song. There does not got to be clowns.
Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. I'm going to hedge my money on clowns. If it's something like spiders or the dark.
Okay.
Like, nah, that's just a little way less exciting than clowns.
Than clowns, especially if they're going to see the greatest show in the galaxy. There's got to be clowns.
Well, because I'm also thinking if you're a companion of the Doctor, being afraid of, like, open space is a little problematic.
Almost certainly. And so for the second part of our prophecy today, as it is the greatest show in the galaxy, the Doctor must perform. What kind of what kind of show do you think the Doctor would put on?
Oh, my God. He juggles.
He juggles. You think he's a juggler?
I really think so. That was the first thing I thought of. Well, because I'm also thinking Six did a little bit of sleight of hand magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not surprise me if the Doctor was proficient in sideshow acts.
Okay.
I
will tell you, Sylvester McCoy was a carnival performer before he was the Doctor.
Oh, my God. Okay. If I said sideshow, would you let me?
No, I want a specific category.
Okay, you want specific. Yeah. I can't cheese my way into this one.
No, you can't cheese your way in this one. I need you to
get. Fuck you.
You can't little guy your way out of this one.
Okay. So I think because Six was the sleight of hand magician, that would be less interesting if they had Seven also be sleight of hand magician. So I'm going to rule that out.
Okay.
So I am going to say, I feel pretty confident with juggle, so I think I might just stick with that.
Alrighty then. Well, let's find out together as we watch the seventh Doctor serial, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Zach, how do you keep getting so big?
Very carefully. Doing this too fast is painful.
And a little stupid looking.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Seymour the Horn-Playing Seal. How you doing, Seymour? Oh, it's your birthday. Happy birthday. How is the family? Oh, the wife left you? And she took the kids? Oh, and she's keeping the house too? That sucks, Seymour. I'm sorry. Oh, but she's letting you keep your magic kit. Well, that's good. And you're performing this weekend? Oh, that's great. I'm so happy for you. I don't think I can make it though. I'm really busy with podcast stuff, and I mean you know how it is. But I hope you have a good time. I hope it's a good show. Back to the episode.
And we are back from the greatest show in the galaxy.
So what do you think, Cassie?
I'm not gonna lie. What the fuck was happening?
I mean, do you really want a little explainer?
I mean, I wonder if here's the thing. I did like it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing, though. I felt like I was trying to follow along with a child explaining to me their dream they had. So half of me sitting here talking to you right now is just going to be me going, wow. Ooh, that's very cool.
I'll just give you, I can make it very, very brief. We don't need to do too much. I can just explain to you the general premise just so you could put some dots together.
Okay, bud.
So, you know, the father, mother, and daughter that were eating snacks and giving ratings to all the performances?
Ooh.
Yeah, they're with their O's and their nines. And then you remember those three big statue gods?
Yeah.
Same people.
Okay, yeah, with the Muppet hands.
Yeah, the gods of Ragnarok, or as the Seventh Doctor keeps calling them, Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
They were making themselves seen as that family.
Yes.
Giving ratings to all the performances. Basically, they had they are gods that demand entertainment. That was their entire existence, is just we demand to be entertained.
Oh no.
So they hijacked the circus, and the circus had to find them people to entertain them. That's the entire premise of this episode, basically. The gods of Ragnarok have hijacked a circus. The circus sends out junk mail to get people to come and compete, quote unquote, in a talent competition, which is just entertain the gods so we don't all die. And that junk mail landed in the TARDIS and summoned the Doctor and Ace. And most of the story is just the Doctor figuring that out.
Yeah.
But you did say you enjoyed it, though.
I did, like, I'm so charmed by Sylvester. He might be the dumbest Doctor, though.
Which is funny because in many ways he's the smartest Doctor, but he's the most
approachable in that I was like, oh, this Doctor really is not trying to be the most clever in the room and to make sure you know he's the most clever.
So Sylvester McCoy's Doctor instead
is very happy-go-lucky.
Well, here's the thing. For him, instead of having to be like, oh, I want everyone to know I'm the smartest guy in the room, his way of doing it was like, I'm going to let the bad guys do what they want for 4 straight episodes. And then by the end of the story, they're going to realize I let them do everything they did and I win anyway. That's the long and short of that was also why at the end of it, Ace is like, so this was your show the whole time. And he goes, yes, because he mathed out the whole episode. He knew what was going to happen.
I also really do like that in the very tippy top of the episode, when faced with something that is potentially a little scary or that is unknown to the Doctor, he hides behind Ace.
Because, as I said, Ace is violent.
Well, because I was like, this is the first time that we've had a doctor companion pairing where the Doctor fully is like, oh no, she's got it.
Yeah. Where, especially because this is like arguably the least athletic of the Doctors, at least physically. Cause we had, except for maybe Old Man One, who you haven't seen, but yeah,
different,
but yeah, but even more so than like, Colin Baker, who was clearly a little rounder.
Well, yeah, but.
But there was still a little.
I'm blanking out the redhead.
Oh, Mel.
Mel literally had him on a TARDIS Peloton. You can say least athletic, and he even makes comments about like how squishy he is. But it's like that. No. So Seven Doctor is a I don't want to say a little bit of a lap dog. Because he's like a lap dog to himself.
We'll get to what kind of dog he is later, I think.
Well, that was going to be my segue. Well, what I say that, though, was like he is not serving anybody else but himself. But he's also not trying not to let everybody in the room know, like, I'm the most clever. Mm-hmm. I have a huge target on my back.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, okay, have fun.
Yeah, he's the most who just presents himself like a guy.
He's the type of person where if he worked in customer service, he would tell people, okay, I hope you have the day you deserve.
I hope you have the day you deserve.
No, but you can try that again.
He would roll an R somewhere in there.
No.
Go forth.
I don't think you would unless it's a word like Ragnarok. Because he didn't really do it anywhere else.
I mean, that's the thing. Sylvester's just kind of seems like... So Sylvester McCoy's Doctor has been described as a chess master. And I think there's some truth to that in two ways. In one way, it's that he is the kind of intelligent guy that can make this kind of plan where he knows that, like, really all he needs to do is just buy time against the gods of Ragnarok.
Yeah, doing close-up magic.
Yeah, doing close-up magic until Ace manages to do what she needs to do. He knows that he needs to do that. He knows that he needs to buy time.
It's really fucking refreshing having a doctor that's like, oh, she's got it. I know my companion is smart and clever. Like, they can handle themselves.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, I have to go out and save her. He's like, oh, no, she'll get herself out of that whatever scuff she's in.
She knows what I need her to do.
She's smart.
Don't need to check in. We're good. I don't need to go lock her in the TARDIS so that she can't have an adventure while I'm dealing with stuff.
She can have her own subplot. That's okay.
Yeah. She. So he's that kind of chess master. He's also the kind of chess master that's just a big dweeb.
Yes, absolutely.
Like he shows up, he talks about things in kind of a dorky way, but in a way that like a dork thinks is cool, or like we're rolling all your R's and being like, oh, I've been there. I've done those things. This is fun. That sort of vibe. And there's a part of me that's like, I find it very, Sylvester McCoy pulls it off in a way that is very charming that I don't think most actors could do.
It reminds me of like when you're meeting a new coworker, mm-hmm. and they're telling you about all of the like accolades they received from their past job. And you're like, wow, that's really great. You served in the military and then you won an award. That's really wonderful. That's really great for you. I was a barista and worked in a restaurant. But please tell me more about yourself.
Yeah, so there's a part of it where it's like he's simultaneously so interesting and also a little infuriating in a way that but also, like I said, Sylvester plays it in a way that's really endearing. And
where
I,
it's like in like the actual truth of the matter is like, if he was on your side, you would be more than like happy to have him. Mm-hmm. But there would also be that little part that's just a it's the same, frankly, it's the same way I feel about you sometimes. Like the second, because like in the episode when he goes down to the gods of Ragnarok, they're not puppeted necessarily, but the suits that the actors are wearing are extraordinarily stiff, aside from about the elbow down, but they still have these like giant stone gloves that they're wearing. So their movements are very limited. And I realized I don't have vocal stims sometimes. Sometimes I have emotion stims, which was seen throughout the episode of me imitating the clown as well.
The chief clown.
Because he did a specific little smile where he like put his tongue to like the tip of his teeth and then his hand would come out from like the side of his ear, almost like what are those dinosaurs with the frillies? Dilophosaurus.
Dilophosaurus?
Yeah, except fun fact, I painted one to be a rainbow for a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So it was a Dilophosaurus because he's gay. Anyways, so there are certain emotions that were just so fun for me to do. And then imitating the gods of Ragnarok and their like stone Muppet hands. And the second I started doing that, Zach goes, I knew this was a good pick for you.
Yeah, there were a few different things that I picked.
It's moments for. Like that, though, that are equally infuriating for me when I know I am predictable to a point that I don't know, but you do.
Yeah, something I was like, these big, doofy stone gods who can't move their fingers. But they have like a vocal filter on their voice.
They're not Beck Bennett.
Yeah. I really thought you would enjoy them.
Well, it's especially the specificity of these like stone giants whole deal being entertain me, which is so funny because usually for something like that, I would expect like a hedonism bot. Mm-hmm. I long to be entertained, not do a dance. Can it do sick tricks?
Tell me a joke.
Yeah. What bits do you do?
We like the guy that rhymes a lot. We make him do rap music.
We give him the script only moments before, so sometimes he kind of forgets.
Bring back Harry Potter and the Order of Perpetual Virginity.
We want the dweeb.
We'll probably get to him in a minute.
I want to be Ragnarok still. They'll come back later.
I'm sure they will.
They absolutely will.
So let's just talk about how did you feel about, I mean, we talked a little bit about Sylvester McCoy now. So let's, mm-hmm. Did you get any kind of vibe off of Ace? I know this, part of the story was that she has lost her bag of explosives. And so we didn't really get to much of that this episode, but we will the next time. Cause the other episode I want to show you, involves her and some Daleks, and I'll leave it at that.
Oh no, Ace V Dalek.
Yeah, and you kind of got some of the vibes with it, like when the two robot clowns are like cornering her in the room, her choice of defense is to rip one of their arms off and threaten to beat them with it.
That, I think Taz had something like that too.
Mm-hmm.
In I think it was in like the Suffering Game or something like that, where Travis's character does rip off somebody's arm.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's just like,
it's so funny.
Yeah, I like
her. One of her, what's the word that I'm looking for in D&D? Not proficiencies, but like feet. Her feet is Tavern Brawler for sure.
Yeah, I think if I was going to pick a favorite classic companion, I think Ace might be my favorite, just because she's so different from everyone else. Like, even modern companions, there isn't really anyone like Ace.
I really fucking appreciate the fact that the Doctor does not seem concerned for her safety.
Yeah.
He's concerned for his safety around her.
Yeah. I also like that she's got this, like, grungy, like, jacket with her name sewn into the back of it. I like just the way she dresses and, like, her vibe.
I really like your outfit. Your vibe seems really cool. Do you want to come home with me?
Hey, I was watching you on television on PBS today, and I was wondering, it's like your vibe.
I can't imagine why you like tough, badass girls who like to wear their name on things and threatens to beat you up with your own limbs. Can't imagine why you like that.
Yeah, just I dig her vibe. I think it's a fun energy she brings to the show more than anything.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I also like that
refreshing.
She calls the Doctor Professor exclusively.
She does refer to him as Doctor, and he goes, "Oh, so you can remember."
Yeah, but she mostly calls him Professor because her name isn't actually Ace. Her name is Dorothy, but she goes by Ace, so she doesn't like using people's actual names. Including herself. So there's almost a so basically her giving you a nickname like Professor is in term of endearment.
You know, I would do that sometimes with people if I didn't remember their names.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like, oh, look at you. Like, you're just so sweet. I'm going to call you Cookie. Which the actual matter of the fact is that that's not me being nice to you. I literally don't remember your name. So you're Cookie now. But it works really well when you're trying to get to know people. Give them nicknames.
Let's talk a little bit about.
We've skipped over something very glaring that I had a big issue with the whole time.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Every time at the tippy top of the episode, the intro just rams into you like an angry Costco shopper.
Just assaults you at the very tippy top.
Oh my God, my teeth hurt. My bones jumped out of my body. I hated every second of it.
So the reason the show sounds like that, or the intro sounds like that, and kind of always, like, you heard it for the Sixth Doctor too. One of the last seasons of the Fourth Doctor, the show was handed over to a producer named John Nathan Turner. If you remember his name, I mentioned
it. John Nathan Turner is his name.
Yeah, I had mentioned him last episode that we did with the Sixth Doctor. They kind of wanted to kick him out of the role of producer of the show, but they more just wanted to fire him in general and get rid of Doctor Who too. And so John Nathan Turner and Doctor Who were sort of clung together because John Nathan Turner didn't want to do it anymore, but they wouldn't let him do anything else. And two, if he left, the show would be gone too. And so it was this weird, like, mutually assured destruction they were stuck in.
Enemies to lovers.
Yes. And when John Nathan Turner took over, one of the things he wanted to do was change the way the intro song sounded. So I know that's already a point against him for you. But he is also the one who picked the Sixth Doctor's coat. So there's.
Yeah, but Six didn't even like his coat.
Well, yes. Again, remember, John Nathan Turner wanted out of the role. And so the great irony was that he picked a garment that you liked so much because he was like, if I give him this, they'll think I'm stupid and move me away.
I liked it because it was very beautifully made.
Yes.
The costumers made something out of a shitty situation. A beautifully tailored coat is not something to joke lightly about, Zachary.
the intro sequence and all the parts you dislike about.
Ouch, I hated that though.
It's also just so, it's so 80s.
It's like the, because I wrote in my notes, why is this inside the Epcot ball?
Yeah, it's got the TARDIS inside a sphere of something.
Why are we suddenly on the Main Street Electrical Parade, but still Doctor Who?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Doctor Who logo they put in it either, where it's like these three giant blocky letters.
Oh, see,
for
now,
Who.
I like that just for the sake of cheese. I like the...
No, Cassie, you're lactose intolerant. You can't have that.
I liked the image of Sylvester just like scowling and then like winking and smiling. Then I thought that was cheeky.
I do like the faces in the intro. Not every doctor gets it. Like, we haven't had that for the modern series at all.
No, we haven't.
But there is a part of me that I have a fondness for it. There's something.
Well, yeah.
So...
Now in the modern series, we have fucking Amy telling us about how she's been running ever since.
The funny thing is that's just in HBO on Max's.
I don't care. Yeah. I have to see it and hear it every single damn time. I hate it. But I like the faces being in it, because then it just lets you know which season you're watching.
Yeah, let you know what season you're watching. I mean, it also gives them an opportunity to give you like their doctor's like vibe in a way without having to do too much. Like, you get this sort of like you said, with the scowl and then the wink. That's a very, I think that describes Sylvester very well, of just like he'd seem sort of like almost like your great uncle.
Like it's not a scowl, though. He's just like very deadpan.
Yeah, where he seems like he's very difficult to read, and then all of a sudden he's very silly.
Yes.
Yeah. So I like that aspect to him.
Oh, that chain, that descriptor, though, that you just used makes my later prediction difficult. Fuck. Speaking of predictions, though.
Casper Fassi was at least 1 for 2. Because Ace is afraid of clowns. You were correct.
Yes, and also the Doctor did do a fair amount of juggling.
The Doctor kept practicing juggling for his show, but he didn't do any juggling in his show.
Yeah, but he did juggle quite a bit, very prolific in his juggling. This feels like a ragtag. If you're not going to give me a whole fucking point, then I feel like this point, this part of a point, goes in the point jar.
You know what? I will say that as of now, I think we can take that part of a point and assemble it with the other parts of a point and make it a whole point for you.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I am sure enough about that, because the fact that you guessed juggling, a thing that he does in not one, but at least 2 episodes.
There has been, and in this episode, there were 3 separate instances where he was fucking juggling.
Yeah, there was the intro where he's like practicing with a book that he's got. I love that he had the book hanging from the ceiling.
I wish I could do that.
I was like, how did you do that?
It's the TARDIS. She did it for him. If I could have books suspended in the air while I'm working on crafts and like cooking or practicing things, I would fucking love that.
Do you think that like if he's got a different book in different parts of the ceiling, like if he steps a little to the side, a different book will drop down?
I think that he has different clips all around the ceiling, and he chooses what book goes there depending on what his need is for that.
That makes sense. I believe that.
Or no. You know, like hospitals, like when you're in a room and they have the curtains that are on those tracks, he has tracks like that all around the TARDIS with fishing line and clothespins to suspend books in the air.
He's a genius. Of course he does. Speaking of this, like early part of the show, did you catch when Ace was getting dressed? She briefly was wearing the Fourth Doctor scarf.
I did catch that. Of course, I caught that.
Yeah, there was another character. She briefly wore a piece from a different character that you haven't met yet. So, also fun, but not a reference for Cassie yet. Do you want to talk a little bit about the circus itself, the psychic circus?
The psychic circus.
Yeah, we have our ringmaster who raps. We have the...
We had not Barack Obama as the ringmaster.
Yeah, just, he does look a little bit like Obama, yeah.
Like, as we were watching, I know that we had made, like, the drive-by comment when we started the episode, but the more I watched him, the more I went, no, like, he could very... He could
do. Yeah, we got similar face shapes.
Yes.
For sure. We've got our not fortune teller, who runs the ticket booth and who sometimes has an accent.
I think she does the accent for show because it was a very like stereotypical fortune teller. Eastern European.
Yeah, like, the very like
welcome.
Yeah, yes. very faux Romani.
Yes. I did think that it was very interesting that the card that she pulled for the doctor was the Hanged Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, that was something that appealed directly to me. So I did look it up. And what I think is very interesting about the Hanged Man is that there are so many different interpretations for that particular card.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite one specifically being that the way that the man is positioned on the card, and for you and anybody else who doesn't know, it's a man that is hanging like upside down from seemingly something that looks like a cross,
mm-hmm.
Hanging by his right foot, but his left foot is free, but is like crossed behind the left foot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a halo around his head. And some interpretations of that card make it seem like you are like if you get that pulled during a reading, depending on what placement that the card is in, basically it means like you are stuck in some facet.
Mm-hmm. But she does spend part of the next episode in a cage.
There are other things, though, and this was the interpretation I had never heard before. And it went into a deeper dive of how the Hanged Man is choosing to be in that position. There's nothing about his demeanor that or like the expression on his face that suggests that he is in any kind of agony.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that his foot, like one is suspended in the air, but the other is free, suggests that the Hanged Man or the man has chosen to be in that position. And so he's viewing the world from a different perspective and is hanging by his own free will.
Yes. Which,
and so I was like, okay, that's kind of fun for the doctor that he is viewing the world through a very unique and different perspective because it's not the world. He has seen many worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a very unique lens already on him in that he is not trapped to having his own understanding of quote unquote the world,
mm-hmm.
be the confines of a single planet.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it leans back into what Ace said at the end where, you know, he said it was, she goes, the doctor, it was your show all along, wasn't it? Which is, that's what it is. The doctor knew what he was going to do the entire time.
Yeah.
He, like that leans to that chess master angle I was telling you about. The doctor chooses to let him get into traps because he mm-hmm. knows how to get out of them.
Yeah. Even in peril, he is very fully aware of the stakes that he is in and the situations that he is in, but is in full control the entire time, despite what it looks like on the surface, which is being in a ring with a professor and a weregoth or a cage.
Let's actually talk about those other people. We should finish talking about the members of the circus, though, because we also have the chief clown, as you.
Oh, my God.
As you got
not
quite
Alan
about.
Cumming.
Yeah. He so
the that, Izzy hands that, of the circus.
That actor was just allowed to do what he wanted with that part.
Oh, my God. And he left no crumbs.
That true enough, because like I wonder, there's a part of me that wonders if he even like designed his own makeup for that role, because it's so weird.
Maybe. I mean, it kind of a fun and unique thing about clowns. Granted, this is for like professional,
mm-hmm.
like people who are clowns, which he might be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I did not look it up and I don't really need to. But a fun thing about clowns is that every clown has their own unique way of doing their makeup,
mm-hmm.
and like how it is presented. My favorite thing about that is there is like a clown museum,
mm-hmm.
where every like official clown that has and like that has ever been paints a unique makeup on eggs. So there's just a bunch of eggs with different clown makeup on them.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked his army of clown robots.
I hated those.
That do sick tricks and also his bidding.
Like, it started to lose me when we were learning more and more about the people in the circus. So Flower Child and Bellboy,
Yeah, Flower Child and Bellboy. Bellboy who built and maintains all the robots.
Flower Child, who was his lover.
Yeah, who was his romantic partner and also made kites.
Oh, yeah, sorry, and also made kites, who, because you know how popular it is to have kites in a circus.
Yeah, that one's,
you know, how much wind there is inside of a tent.
That also loses me a little bit. I will agree. I understand why they chose it, because the idea is that because she sewn the eyes onto the kites, the gods of Ragnarok can see through the kites.
I understand that, but there were literally only two kites that were flying outside, miles away from the tent.
Yeah.
Because if they had like a dozen kites in the sky to indicate to passerbys where the circus tent was, okay, yeah, that makes sense, because those are flying way high up.
Mm-hmm.
And since this circus tent seems to be in the middle of the desert, where the closest person to them is a closeted weirdo that's just very happy to see decently dressed young boys driving by on bikes while she is dressed like an absolute maniac with nothing but the insides of cantaloupes strewn about in bowls around her fruit stand.
The inside of cantaloupes, if cantaloupes were full of corn.
Yeah, also corn.
It was specifically like creamed corn inside a cantaloupe. It was very weird.
Yeah, and she's scorning the doctor, calling him a weirdo. And I'm like, lady, have you seen yourself? You look like the type of person I would have called a witch when I was younger.
And you want to know how I know that, Cassie? Because he dresses like you do now.
Shut up.
Yeah, that made me laugh. So funny thing about us talking about the tent here for just a moment. This episode wasn't going to be filmed in a tent originally, which feels weird for a circus episode, right? They were going to film in a soundstage like they normally do, but instead they had to evacuate that soundstage because it had an asbestos problem. And so Yikes. They went, well, if we're going to film a tent in the middle of the desert, I guess we're filming inside that tent too.
I mean, that makes sense.
I shouldn't say a desert. It's a quarry, because all classic Doctor Who episodes eventually wind up in a quarry.
I know they're all in the fucking quarry. At the very end, you're like, oh, yeah, I want you to see this. And I went, you want me to see the fucking quarry? The quarry that we've seen in other episodes? Yeah, I recognize this fucking quarry.
That's another fun fact I wanted to bring up. So in that shot at the end where the Doctor is walking away from an explosion.
Yeah, cool guy.
Yeah, he's doing cool guy, don't look at explosion. He was told the explosion was going to be further away than it was. The crew over-rigged that explosion.
Was it crew or was it Ace that explosion?
Talking specifically in terms of production, the crew over-rigged that explosion. But Sylvester McCoy knew they only had one take. So he's like, whatever I do, no matter what happens, I just keep walking. And so if you look on the actor's face as a part of it, it's like, for just like a half second, he gives a
I missed that, unfortunately.
it's so brief, like you have to look for it.
I was looking at, do you want to hear the worst part about that?
What's that?
I was looking at the quarry.
Yeah, so that's one of those, like, Sylvester McCoy is a good actor, man, because I feel like if a too big explosion went off behind me, I would have been like,
how that goes, act?
Uh-huh.
I think one more time for the
people.
Okay, thank you.
And then
One more time for safety.
Okay,
thank you.
And then, yes, we also had a Bellboy. And I was telling you a little bit ago about how John Nathan Turner desperately wanted out of the show and had for quite a number of years.
Yeah.
But wasn't allowed to, basically.
Yeah.
I've never read anything that confirms this for sure, but I think Bellboy was a self-insert for John Nathan Turner. because it is very obvious that the circus itself is a metaphor for Doctor Who, down to it having a weird fanboy come in and talk about how much he liked it when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And also, like, the kid is a fan of the adventurer and his companion, who just happens in this case to be Captain Cook and his werewolf companion, as opposed to the Doctor and Ace.
Hey, Weregoth,
excuse me. Yes. So the circus itself is clearly a metaphor for Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah, clearly. I caught on to that. I just didn't want to bring it up in case you didn't know.
Okay. It's clearly if you choose to read into this.
Stop saying clearly. Some of us aren't as smart as you, Zach.
And so, but I think that Bellboy is a self-insert for John Nathan Turner, because a lot of it is him
especially when he's tied up and like almost shirtless, right?
Well, John Nathan Turner was gay, so don't get too excited.
I mean, we don't know where Bellboy standing is.
John Nathan Turner, well, Bellboy talks about how like excited he was when the circus started and how they had fun.
Well, everybody was excited, it seemed like.
Yeah. And I will say part of the reason I think that's true about Bellboy being a self-insert for John Nathan Turner is Bellboy's romantic partner is Flower Child, who was also in the circus. John Nathan Turner's partner was the production manager for Doctor Who. Mm. So they are both part of this same circus.
Did the production manager run away and give him an earring?
I mean, I don't know about their particular jewelry trades, but there's a lot of it where just he's like, I am stuck here. I cannot leave.
I can't leave because without me, everything will fail.
Yeah. So there's a part of it where I feel like maybe that was, I mean, I'm not, like I said, I've never read anything that specifically confirms that, but I do feel like that's very likely, was that John Nathan Turner just was like, can you do me a favor and put me in this episode? It's also because John Nathan Turner and Bellboy have very similar hair. They both have, I mean, granted, big brown curly hair is not like a unique trait, but I do wonder if they did it on purpose. Anyway, that's my little fan theory conspiracy corner.
Wow.
Was there anyone else that was in the, I don't think there was anyone else in the circus.
Yes. Kingpin.
Oh, yes. Deadbeat/Kingpin.
Yeah. Or what I wrote down as Gremlin Mad Max.
Yeah. Vincent D'Onofrio himself making an appearance in.
otherwise known as, was it Nero? Vandal of the Roads?
Oh, you're talking about the biker from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, I thought that was Kingpin.
No, that was a different guy. He was another person that came to entertain the gods of Ragnarok.
Aha, gotcha.
And got burned in the process. I do see how you mix them up though, especially with the helmet on.
Yeah.
But you're thinking of Nord, Vandal of the Roads.
Nord, thank you.
With his fucking Mad Max hat and bike.
Gremlin. Get them big old doofy ears.
So, yeah, we talked about them. Let's talk a little bit about the other people of the circus. We talked about Mags the Weregoth.
Yeah.
I
do like the pairing of like a scholarly gentleman with their little.
The little dog.
Their little like alt goth pet. Which like there is a part of me that's like, this feels mildly offensive, but also if an older gentleman was like I just like to take them around with me, I think they're fun. I'd be like, hi, yeah, I am fun. And
and also Captain Cook in general kind of sucks. Like he's just a shitty guy.
You had said that there was going to be there was other casting.
So, yes, I had mentioned to you in the middle of our watching because I wanted to see what you would guess.
Albert Finney.
That there was a British actor almost got that role. I don't think he was famous at the time.
I said it already. Albert Finney.
But he is certainly famous now. It was not Albert Finney.
Michael Caine.
It's not Michael Caine. I'll give you one more guess.
Fuck. Okay.
It is a British actor.
I know. Who? Michael Gambon.
Not Michael Gambon either. It was Sir Ian McKellen was who they wanted to play role. Right. And as soon as I say that, it like washes over you. You could see that universe.
Well, because I was trying to like Michael Caine was like a little bit of a joke answer. I really was earnestly trying to think back on like, who was an actor that was born
who would have been the right age is what
exactly.
Yeah. I totally get that.
That's why I landed specifically on Albert Finney and then Michael Gambon.
Yeah. I had wondered if you, cause I feel like that actor was trying to do a bit of a McKellen or an Ian McKellen with like his beats, but also I don't know if Ian McKellen was famous enough to warrant that yet. I could be mistaken. Maybe Ian McKellen was super famous in the mid 80s, especially in the UK. But I would love to see the universe where he played Captain Cook, because that would have been a role he would have eaten up.
Yeah, no crumbs.
Although that guy also did a great job.
He was fine.
Yeah,
he played stuffy old white guy pretty good.
But yeah, but it's the very like the kind that goes to hunt elephants. Like that's the kind of vibe I was getting off of him.
Nope, I'm fine here. Thank you.
She'll enjoy my tea while you go die.
It reminds me of, I don't think you've seen, or it's been a minute since you've seen it, in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the grandpa.
No, I've not seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in a while.
Yeah, just any time that they're like, okay, like we're going to go out on a picnic. Do you want to come with? And he's just like, no, my boy, I'm going to be like going into the deepest, darkest jungles of Peru.
Opens newspaper.
Kind of. He has like a little, we'll call it an outhouse. I'm sure that there's another name for it. And it just kind of like walks in, stands inside of his little. I fucking love
like a true autistic king.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole family's full of autistics. We're not talking about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang though. Even though Caractacus, are you fucking kidding me? That's Dick Van Dyke's name in that movie is Caractacus Potts. Anyways,
yeah, and I like Captain Cook as a villain. He felt very weird. Like he felt like he was very
he was like friend but also foe.
Yeah, well, he was kind of a dick, but because he played it so calm, it was almost easy to forget. He's doing a very like stiff upper lip British kind of guy where it's like he's not allowed to show that he's afraid of dying. But he very clearly is, because he keeps sending in people before him, letting people cut him in line to go entertain the gods of Ragnarok so they could die instead of him. There's a part of me where it's like, dude, you're in, like, doesn't matter who cuts in front of you. You're in line. Like, you're going to die.
It's like when people try to cut in traffic and like zip all the way up the like off ramp and then try to get over. Like, it doesn't matter. You're making traffic worse. You're the problem.
Yep, you're why we're stuck like this. And I liked that at the end, after he died, you and I both have that same thought where it was just like, oh, he was faking it. And then he's like, no, I am dead. And he's clearly like got pale makeup on, so he looks like he's dead. And then at the end, he has a story where it was like, I was once told of a man who was forced to act after death. I find the experience rather bad. As he jumps himself off a cliff.
I hate when I jump myself off a cliff. Hoo-wee. Mondays, am I right? Another thing I liked is that because of Mags, it is now confirmed canon that goths are from a different planet.
Yeah,
and that under full moonlight, we turn into serpent badger werewolves.
Yeah, we skipped over her transformation a little bit because she's afraid of the moon until they revealed that she's a werewolf, but she doesn't turn into a wolf at all. She just kind of gets big teeth and glows. Now, I do appreciate in the transformation sequence, they give her different sized teeth. So every time they show you a different phase, her teeth are a little
and
bigger.
She is actively growling, and it doesn't sound like just somebody going,
it sounded like a dog.
I said badger.
It sounded like a badger.
Yeah,
you don't think it sounded like a dog, Cassie?
No, I said badger. I said serpent badger.
Who is my dogter?
Oh, you were going into my bit.
I was trying to like let you do it. I was like, is it like a dog? Like a dog, Cassie?
See, so here's my thing with Sylvester McCoy as dog.
Mm-hmm.
I have three different options.
Interesting. Okay. Are they?
They're all toy breeds, okay, which I think is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But they are all different. Very different. One of them specifically is inspired by that video that you, me, and Alex like to watch. The ruff. Which, for those of you at home, you might have seen it. It's like a chihuahua on a like a duvet cover.
Mm-hmm.
He just goes up to the camera, and as he's barking, he like bows his head and he goes ruff. So that I was like, okay, cool. Sylvester might be a
especially because Sylvester does like to roll his R's. Ruff,
yeah.
Ragnarok.
Well, that's also ruff. Why I was like, okay, that could be really funny. He could be a little chihuahua.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I like him as just a chihuahua. I think that there are two other options that are much better. So that was my third. But I can't decide what I like as my first pick, and I'll tell you why, or I'll show you why rather, because I don't think you know dogs very well.
I mean, you're very close to what I would have guessed for him. My personal choice would have been a little wiener dog, like a little dachshund.
Elaborate.
Because they're like small and they're kind of unassuming most times, but there's still like a performativeness about them when you get them energized. That felt very like appropriate to Sylvester. There's also just there's some scheming in those eyes, and in those dachshund eyes, they got they're scheming in them hot dog buns.
Because I narrowed my choice, my picks down to two.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of an Affenpinscher?
I have not.
You've seen one though.
Oh, what a cutie!
They are so cute. They're these black little. They look like Ewoks. Now that I'm looking at it, it's like Ewok face, Chihuahua body, longer hair. But I liked this one because they are specifically like very stubborn, but very smart. So they're a little difficult to train because they'll just kind of do whatever they want. The other one, though, that I am leaning a little bit more heavily towards is a common dog to use in performances because they're very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
They're cute little dogs, and specifically they get along with cats very well.
Okay.
And I say that specifically because Ace strikes me as a cat type. Like Ace's personality is very cat-like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Seven might be a Papillon.
Okay. Interesting.
Because they're also like very schemey. They're very smart, very clever dogs, and like unassuming.
I'd also briefly thought about a pointer because they're also very performative, but there's still like a quiet regality to them, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I definitely think that I like Seven being a smaller dog. I think that fits for him.
Yeah, I do. So we talk about our the person on DeviantArt who's drawn these.
Yes.
Her name is T. Chiron. And I don't know if I agree with it in terms of like matching personality, but I do like the visual of it. She has chosen Sylvester McCoy to be a basset hound.
Huh.
Which
it's the specificity of the little like vest that makes me lean more towards Papillons, okay, because usually or anytime I've seen a little Papillon, it's in the arms of a very wealthy white lady and it's wearing a little shirt.
I can't
shirt.
Imagine Sylvester McCoy being in the arms of a very wealthy white lady.
Well, yeah, but they're wearing a little shirt and oh, she doesn't like going out without her little booties on. Like, I could definitely see Seven being like, oh, I can't go outside. It's wet. Let me grab my umbrella because it's wet outside.
Yeah, some little Papillon wearing a hat.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Yeah, I think I'd be very cute.
And it's also anytime that he was like his little hat was on, his hair just kind of like flicks out like around the hat, which I was like, all right, so definitely more of like a long haired breed, or like a longer haired Chihuahua even, but like. Mm-hmm. Papillon specifically like get along really well with cats. It's like Ace is a cat. Ace is a black cat easily.
I did like watching when when Sylvester McCoy started doing his tricks, I watched you be like, okay, he's won me over a little bit.
Well, I was also very angry because I know I said very affirmatively that because Colin Baker did close-up magic, there was a good chance that Sylvester McCoy would not do close-up magic.
Which was his entire performance. I mean, he did also do an escape routine.
And he juggled!
I also liked to, you had described it as a sick trick where he did his, like, not a moonwalk, but more of a mooned bring it around town.
Yeah. Yeah, sick tricks.
Yeah, you would be like, I didn't know he could do, I didn't think of him doing sick tricks. God, it's really funny to watch the doctor just do close-up magic. And then at the end of it, be like, this is a piece of metal that was once in a sword. Throw it in the air and the metal hard cuts to a sword.
3D hard cuts.
Yeah. I like this story. I like that it's kind of weird.
Oh, that was one more thing before we start doing our wrap up. Mm-hmm. I really like the clowns versus the old lady. I wanted more of that because that was so funny.
Or the clown.
That's one of my app, like my whole bread and butter is when you have what I will just lovingly refer to as weirdos. So people like me versus like the people that don't quote unquote like subscribe to that lifestyle, just duking it out where it's like you are wearing your little like. Your little edgy sun hat mm-hmm. because people like me in the queer community made it cool again for you to fucking wear, Barbara. So I love when opposing forces are really duking it out.
I'm remembering now when I showed you the costumes, how excited you were at Tom Baker dressed as a clown. And this the chief clown was not dressed unlike that character.
No.
And also you got excited at in the last story with the Sixth Doctor where he had referred to himself as a clown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give out any spoilers, but Ren Faire is coming up. And we all know now that I really do like dressing up as doctors for Ren Faire, so that's all I'm going to say on that.
But yeah, I like this story. It's weird. It's got like a premise that really only works in Doctor Who, those are all my favorite episodes of Doctor Who. And they've got a premise that doesn't work in any other show.
I understood as the more we were watching, I understood right out the gate why you chose this for me, because also like peek behind the curtain a little bit. My favorite book is literally about a circus.
Yes.
If it wasn't for the piss poor living conditions and the animal cruelty, I would proudly say I love circuses. I love the idea of a circus a lot, though. Just that idea of escapism and, you know, showcasing of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why Cassie loves The Greatest Showman.
No. No,
Cassie's a big fan of the Hugh Jackman movie, The Greatest Showman.
I've never, ever seen it, nor do I have any plans to.
Well, maybe we'll watch it.
No, no, no. This is not how you're ending the episode, you prick. Yeah, you chuckle over there. I was just going to say that I appreciate when you pick things out for me that, you know, I'll like based off of the things that I like. And I didn't even tell you how I felt about this episode as a whole. It was fine. I had the same issue with this episode that I have with this whole damn show altogether. There were pieces I liked a lot, mm-hmm. a lot. But altogether, just did not hit the way that I want it to.
Yeah, I'm going to try to pick episodes more for you specifically. Some of them are a little harder to do.
Well, I also think that this episode had the marvelous disadvantage of being watched on Tubi, so it still had ads.
When I picked it, I could have sworn that was one of the ones that was out, but I was incorrect. Next time we go back to another doctor, when we'd watched the Fourth Doctor, I had had one picked out that I thought would be good for you, but I got outvoted by our followers. So next time I will not make a mistake of supporting democracy. I will have a dictatorship, a doctatorship.
Doctator. Is the next doctor gonna be a sweet potato?
It's just it's the next doctor is just Mr. Potato Head from Toy Story.
Oh my god, I can knit a four scarf for like a really good looking sweet potato.
Yeah, the only two classic doctors we have left are 1, 5, and 8.
Wow.
Yeah, you'll one day you'll get to see 8's glorious hair in action. Oh my god. But it is not this time, nor will it be the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
What next episode are we doing, Zach?
Next episode, we're going to go back to the regular show.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we're done with our little journey here in the classic series.
Oh, we're done with our vacation.
Yeah, we're doing our little vacation into the past. We're going to go back and see
a little trip down memory lane.
So you know what we're going to do in the next episode, Cassie? On the next episode, we're going to kill Hitler.
Yay, we're going to kill Hitler.
On the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? Officially journeyed through 3 more classic doctors, leaving only 3 more to come. We will definitely be visiting them later this year, but for now we head back to the modern era and kill Hitler, as was foretold in the prophecies. If you enjoyed this little trip to the past, be sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you're listening right now, so you can get all of our episodes delivered right to your phone, or computer, or probably your washing machine at this point. I don't know. If you've got a classic episode you'd like us to look at in the future, you can come send me a message on Blue Sky at WIMDPOD. That's WIMDPOD. If you'd really like to support us, you can join the likes of Andrew Blewett and David Gansel over at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to episodes of this podcast a whole week early. But no matter what, we will see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.